Welcome to Zichur Daf Simanim. My name is Ram Goldar, and today we're Masechet Shabbos Daf Tzadik Zayin. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, it was taught in the Braisa that Rebbe Akiva learned from the pasuk V'yichar Af Hashem Bam Yelach, and the wrath of Hashem flared up against them, and he left. That from the word them, we learned that not only was Miriam afflicted with tzaras, but Aaron was as well. Rav Yehuda ben Maaser told Rebbe Akiva that in the future we'll have to give an accounting because if he said it was true, Rebbe Akiva revealed something negative about Aaron that the Torah concealed, and if it's not true, then he has falsely maligned them. A brisa was brought that supported Rabbi Akiva's view based on the pasuk, Yifan Aharon el Miriam, Ehinei Tzaras. And Aharon turned to Miriam, and behold, she was afflicted with Tzaras. And Aharon turned can be interpreted to mean he turned away from his own Tzaras, which was cured first. Point number two is taught in a brisa that if someone throws an object from one Rishus Rabbim to another Rishus Rabbim, and there's a Rishus Yachid in between, the Rebbe holds him liable while the Chachamim hold that he's exempt. Rav and Shmuel both say that Rebbe holds he's liable only if the Rishus Yachid was roofed. For we say that a house is as though it's full of articles. Therefore, the object is perceived as if it came to rest there. And Rashi explains that since it's both dark and stuffy, a house is regarded as though it lacks airspace and is filled to the top. And point number three, the Gemara initially states that it's clear that if one intended to throw an object 8 amos in a Rishus Rabbim, but he actually only threw it 4 amos, then it's similar to the case where one intended to write the name Shimon and only wrote the first two letters, Shin and Mem, where he's liable for Achatas. Later, the Gemara explains that they are not comparable, since in the case of writing, it's impossible to write Shimon without writing the first two letters, Shin and Mem. Thus, inherent in the writer's original intent is to write the name Shem first. But in the case of throwing an object, the person that intends to throw an item 8 amos obviously does not intend it to land after the initial 4 amos. So once again, the three points are, number one, it was taught in a brisa. The Rebbe Akiva learned from the pasuk, V'yichar af Hashem bam v'yelach, and the wrath of Hashem flared up against them, and he left. And then from the use of the word them, we can learn that not only was Miriam afflicted with tzaras, but Aharon was as well. Rebbe Yehuda ben Maaser told Rebbe Akiva that in the future he'll have to give an accounting, because if what he said was true, Rebbe Akiva revealed something negative about Aharon that the Torah concealed. And if it's not true, then he has falsely maligned him. A brisa was brought that supported Rebbe Akiva's view based on the pasuk, Yifan Aharon el Miriam, Ehinei Tzaras. And Aharon turned to Miriam, and behold, she was afflicted with Tzaras. And Aharon turned can be interpreted to mean he turned away from his own Tzaras, which was cured first. Point number two is taught in a brisa that if someone throws an object from one Rishus Rabbim to another Rishus Rabbim, and there's a Rishus Yachid in between, the Rebbe holds him liable while the Chachamim hold his exempt. Rav and Shmuel both say the Rebbe holds he's liable only if the Rishus Yachid was roofed. For we say that a house is as though it's full of articles. Therefore, the object is perceived as if it came to rest there. And Rashi explains that since it's both dark and stuffy, a house is regarded as though it lacks airspace and is filled to the top. And point number three, the Gemara initially states that it is clear that if one intended to throw an object 8 amos in Rishus Rabbim, but he actually threw it only 4 amos, then it's similar to the case where one intended to write the name Shimon and only wrote the first two letters, Shin and Mem, where he's liable for Achatas. Later, the Gemara explains that they are not comparable, since in the case of writing, it's impossible to write Shimon without writing the first two letters, Shin and Mem. Thus, inherent in the writer's original intent is to write the name Shem first. But in the case of throwing an object, the person that intends to throw an item 8 amos obviously does not intend it to land after the initial 4 amos. All right, so now we go to our Simbrot Tzadik Zayin, and in this case, a number of people suggested chess master, grand chess master, so I'm going to go with chess master in this case, so thank you everybody for making the suggestion. Here goes. When the chess master got angry because he got tzaras, he threw his chess pieces from Rishus HaRabim through a stuffy house into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side, landing 4 amos away, not 8. Once again, in slow motion. When the chess master, that must mean we're on Daf Tzadik Zayin. When the chess master got angry because he got tzaras, which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa that Rabbi Akiva learned from the pasuk, V'yichar af Hashem bam v'yelach, and the wrath of Hashem flared up against them, and he left, that we learn from the word them that not only was Miriam afflicted with tzaras, but Aharon was as well. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaser told Rabbi Akiva that in the future he'll have to give an accounting, because if what he said was true, Rabbi Akiva revealed something negative about Aharon that the Torah concealed, and if it's not true, then he has falsely maligned him. A brisa was brought that supported Rabbi Akiva's view based on the pasuk of Yifan Aharon el Miriam v'hineh mitzaras, and Aharon turned to Miriam, and behold, she was afflicted with tzaras. And Aharon turn can be interpreted to mean he turned away from his own tzaras, which was cured first. So when the chess master got angry because he got tzaras, he threw his chess pieces from Rishus HaRabim through a stuffy house into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side, which reminds us, it was taught in the Braisa that if someone throws an object from one Rishus HaRabim to another Rishus HaRabim, and there is a Rishus HaYachanim between, the Rebbe holds him liable while the Chachamim hold his exam. Rav and Shmuel both say that Rebbe holds his liable only if the Rishus HaYachin was roofed, for we say that a house is as though it's full of articles, therefore the object is perceived as if it had come to rest there. Rashi explains that since it's both dark and stuffy, a house is regarded as though it lacks airspace and is filled to the top. So when the chess master got angry because he got saras, he threw his chess pieces from Rishus HaRabim through a stuffy house into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side, landing 4 amos away, not 8. Which reminds us, the Gemara initially states that it's clear that if one intended to throw an object 8 amos in Rishus HaRabim, but he actually threw it only 4 amos, then it's similar to the case where one intended to write the name Shimon and only wrote the first two letters Shin and Mem, where he's liable for Akatas. Later, the Gemara explains that they're not comparable, since in the case of writing, it's impossible to write Shimon without writing the first two letters, Shin Mem. Thus, inherent in the writer's original intent is to write the name Shem first. But in the case of throwing an object, the person that intends to throw an item 8 amos obviously did not intend it to land after the initial 4 amos. So once again, when the chess master got angry because he got saras, he threw his chess pieces from Rishus HaRabim through a stuffy house into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side, landing 4 amos away, not 8. All right, so now it's time for a 4 Ba Chazara. Daf Sadi Gimel. So the symbol of Sadi Gimel is a chugga-chugga-choo-choo train. So here goes. The little train. Train, that means we're on Daf Sadi Gimel. The little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called Amir Misayeya, which reminds us. Rav Chisda stated that in a case where two people carrying an object into Rishus HaRabim, and one was strong enough to carry it by himself and the other was not, then the one who was able to carry it by himself is liable since he accomplished the entire action, and the one who was unable is exempt since he didn't accomplish anything. When Rav Hamnuna suggested the weaker person was a Masayeya, an aid to the stronger person, Rav Chisda responded, Masayeya ein bo mamish, merely aiding someone is not significant. The Gemara brings a number of proofs that support Rav Chisda's view, the final one being that if a Kohen is mekabel dam, he receives blood of an offering using his right hand, and his left hand aids his right hand in holding the kli, the avoda is valid. Even though an avoda that is done with a left hand is invalid, in this case it was merely a Masayeya, which is insignificant. So the little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called Amir Masayeya. So it crashed through the door the two men were holding to trap a deer, which reminds us that the Braisa Sadi Beis Amud Beis says that according to Rabbi Meir, if two people carried out an object together and they both were strong enough to carry it out individually, they are still both liable. The Gemara asks if they individually need to carry out one full shear, or is one full shear sufficient to make them both liable? The Gemara brings a number of proofs to support the opinion that only one full shear is required. One proof is from a Mishnah that states, if a deer entered a house, and two people who are both capable individually of closing the door, close the door together, then they are both liable for the malach of trapping. From the fact that the Mishnah does not require each of them to trap a full measure indicates that one full measure is sufficient for the two of them. So the little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called Amir Masayeya. So it crashed through the door two men were holding to trap a deer and went back to pulling a kli, carrying a little pea. Which reminds us, the next mission the Perek states that if one transfers food that is less than the required shear in a kli, the person is exempt from carrying even the kli, since a kli tefelelo. The kli is secondary to the food. The Miri explains that since the kli is a mere accessory, it's subordinate to the food, and since there's no liability for the primary object, there's no liability for the subordinate object. Daf Sadi Dalet. So the symbol of Sadi Dalet is a hunter. So here goes. The hunter, that means run Daf, Sadi Dalet. The hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy. Which reminds us, the Mishnah Daf Sadi Gimel on Bay stated that if one carries a live person on a bed, he's exempt for carrying the person and even for taking out the bed because the bed is secondary to the person. The Gemara tends to prove that this is the minority opinion Rabbi Nassim based on a brisa of the Tod, that if one carried out animals into Rishus HaRabim, either dead or alive, one is liable. Rabbi Nassim, however, disagrees and says that although one is liable for carrying a dead animal, he's exempt for carrying a living animal, Shachai Noset Tzatzmo, because a living creature supports its own weight. This is like our case in the Mishnah of carrying a live person on a bed. Rabbi says that it's possible that Rabbanan also hold that in regards to a person, Achai knows that that's mo, and they only disagree with Rabbi Nassim in the case of animals, because animals stiffen themselves to try to escape, and as Rashi explains, they actually feel heavier. Therefore, they cannot be considered as if they carry themselves. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying, because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its 3 white hairs, which reminds us, if a Mitzorah plucked out one of two white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin to prevent himself from being declared Tamei, he has transgressed a negative commandment. There's a Malchokas Amarayim regarding a case where Mitzorah plucked out one of three white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin. Rav Nachman holds that he's liable because his action is potentially consequential. For if one more hair becomes removed, the tumor will depart. Rav Sheshet says he's not liable since the tumor is still present with the two remaining white hairs. Therefore, the act was inconsequential. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs, which got snagged on his partially detached fingernail. Which reminds us, it was taught in an amended brace that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that fingernails or cuticles that have become detached most of the way may be removed by hand, but it's rabbinically forbidden to be done with a kli, with an instrument. If they did not become detached most of the way, then removing them by hand is rabbinically forbidden, and removing them with an instrument would make one liable to bring a chatas. Rabbi Bar Chana said in the name of Yochanan that removing them is only allowed where the cuticles have become detached toward the top of the finger and are peeling back toward the base of the nail, because this causes considerable pain. Daf Sadihei, so the symbol of Sadihei is a Tzahal tank commander. So here goes. The tank commander, that means run Daf Sadihei. The tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living, which reminds us, Rabbi Yabo said, as explained to him in the name of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, the one who braids or fixes her hair on Shabbos is liable for bona, building. The Gemara asks if braiding can be considered building. The Gemara brings a proof that it is from Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, who explained the pasuk, Yivan Hashem Elokim Etzela, and Hashem God built the side he had taken from man into a woman, that Kosh Baruch Hu braided Chava's hair and brought her to Adam, for in the cities by the sea they called the braider a banyasa, a builder. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living that he needed her perforated flower pots for targa practice, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if one plucks a plant from an atzitz nakub, a perforated flower pot, on Shabbos, he's liable, but he's exempt if it was unperforated. Rabbi Shimon says one is exempt in both cases. Rashi explains that according to the Tanakhama, in the case of the perforated pot, since the plant draws nourishment from the ground, it's considered attached to the ground. Plucking it would therefore violate the malach of tolish, plucking, which is a told of kotzer, harvesting. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living that he needed her perforated flower pots for targa practice to master blasting holes of five different sizes. Which reminds us, Rabbi said there are five different measures with regards to perforations in an earthenware kli. A hole large enough to let out a liquid will render a shard no longer susceptible to tumah, since it no longer has a use. A larger hole, that will enable a liquid to seep in, will render a kli unfit to be used with the mechatas, because the pasuk says that a kli needs to be used with the mechatas, and this size hole makes it that it's not considered a proper kli. A larger hole, the size of a small root, makes the kli a natzitz nakub, a perforated pot, and the seeds inside are therefore considered attached to the ground and cannot become tameh. A larger hole, the size of an olive, will render an earthenware vessel no longer susceptible to tumah, since it's typically no longer usable. However, if someone designates the kli to store pomegranates, then they are still makabel tumah. And a hole the size of a pomegranate will render a kli no longer susceptible to tumah, even was designated to be used to hold pomegranates. However, if it's surrounded by a sealed cover and is inside a tent together with a dead person, it will prevent tumah from entering the interior unless the majority of the kli is broken. Rashi explains that tumah can only enter a kli through an opening and not through a hole in its side. Daf Tzadivav. So the Simfer Tzadivav is a town crier reading a government proclamation. So here goes. The town crier proclaimed. Town crier proclaimed. That means run Daf Tzadivav. The town crier proclaimed that no balls were to be thrown from balcony to balcony, which reminds us, in the opening mission, the 10th parak, which discusses cases of transferring by throwing zrika, or handing over hashata, it's taught that if one hands over or throws an object from one balcony in Rishus Yachid to another balcony in Rishus Yachid on the other side of Rishus Rabim, he's exempt. Whereas if the two balconies were on the same side of the Rishus Rabim, he would be exempt for throwing the item, but liable for handing it over. The mission explains that the malach of Hotza is fashioned after the Avodas Levim, the work of the Levim, who transfer the Mishkan's beams onto wagons in Rishus Rabim. Since the malach was done specifically through handing over, one is not liable for throwing, and since the transfer was done along the length of Rishus Rabim, one is not liable for handing an object across a Rishus Rabim. So the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations, which reminds us, the Gemara seeks the source of the malach of Hotza and quotes Rabbi Yochanan, who says, it's one of the pasuk in the parts of the collection of the donations for the Mishkan. Yitzav Moshe ve'yaviru kol b'machaneh. And Moshe commanded, and they sent the proclamation in the camp. Moshe was standing in the Machaneh Levi, which was considered a Rishus of Rabbi. And I was telling B'nai Yisrael not to take out and bring materials from their Rishus Yachin, from their homes, into the Rishus of Rabbim. Rabbi Yochanan learns that that day was a Shabbos, from a Gezer Shabbat. It says here, Ve'yaviru kol b'machaneh, and they sounded a proclamation in the camp. And it says regarding Yom Kippur of Yovel, Ma'avart the shofar trua, and you shall sound a broken blast of the shofar. Just as Yom Kippur is a day of prohibition, so too here in this pasuk, it's a day of prohibition, meaning Shabbos. So the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations and with wood gathered for the royal bonfire. Which reminds us, the Gemara brings various opinions regarding which malach in the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the gatherer of wood, transgressed and made him liable in the Midbar for transgressing Shabbos. Reviewed it said in the name of Shmuel, he was a mavir, a transfer of wood, dalet amos, four amos in Rishus Rabbi. Atan and Braisatad, he was a tolish, a detacher of wood that was still growing. Rav Acha, the son of Rabbi Yaakov, said he was a ma'amir, a gatherer of detached and scattered wood. The Gemara identifies him as Tzolavcha, the father of five daughters, who inherited him in the Midbar. All right, now it's time to conclude our pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachas. Number 1. Which stuff do we learn that there are 5 different measures of perforations for a kli cheres, for an earthenware vessel? That's on Daf Tzadihei. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we learn that Aharon also got Saras? That's on Daf Tzadi Zayin. Good. Number 3. Which daf do we learn that one can remove a partially detached fingernail if it hurts? That's on Daf Tzadi Dal. Good. Number 4. Which daf do we learn which Malach and Mekoshesh Eitzim did? That's on Daf Tzadi Vav. Good. Number 5. Which daf do we learn that a kli is tufel to the object that it contains? That's on Daf Tzadi Gimel. Good. Number 6. Which daf do we learn that Rebbe holds that one is chayiv if one throws from a Rishus of Rabbim through a Rishus Yachid into another Rishus of Rabbim, provided that Rishus Yachid was roofed? That's on Daf Tzadi Zayin. Good. Number 7. Which daf do we learn there's a difference between when one carries something in front of him versus when he carries it behind him? That's on Daf Tzadi Beis. Great. Number 8. Which daf do we learn that the source for the Malach of Hotzah comes from the donations made from the Mishkan? That's on Daf Tzadi Vav. Good. Number 9. Which daf do we learn Mesayeya Imbo Mamish? That's on Daf Tzadi Gimel. Good. And finally, number 10. Which daf do we learn that braiding is the Malach of Bona? That's on Daf Tzadi Hey. Great, now we go to the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1. Which daf do we learn that there are 5 reasons why the Parsha of Tzitzis was included in Kriyat Shema? That's on Daf Yud Beis. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we learn that if one went into a shul, he can go out through an entrance, even though it'll be a shortcut? That's on Daf Samech Beis. Good. And number 3. Which daf do we learn why specifically Tekanes Ezra was for a Balkari? That's on Daf Chab Beis. Excellent. All right, that concludes our pop quiz, plus the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Rabbi Avraham Goldwater from Zichu, wishing you a great day and great learning.